I lay down next to him and touched him extra gently. But I had to touch him. When I did, my hands were suddenly too small. They couldn't feel enough of him, hold enough of his skin. I didn't want any space in between our bodies. No light, no air, but a vacuum. I rolled on top of him and let gravity press us together. Lips, chest, abdomen, thighs. I wasn't planning to have sex with him. Only now, it was all I wanted. My body and my mind and all my parts shouted that this was the right thing to do right now. I needed to be with Connor. I was in love with him. And that sudden clarity triggered an avalanche. I felt overcome with the freedom of feeling the feelings I'd worked so hard to hide. I stopped talking myself out of what I desperately wanted. "Do you have something we could use?" I whispered.
"Wait."
He pushed my hair so it fell over one shoulder.
"This isn't because of today, is it? The Thanksgiving baskets? Because I don't want it to be like that."
I could have cried. I pushed Connor away for so long, he had no idea how deeply I cared about him. My feelings had been locked up in that shed because I was afraid to let them out, except now, for whatever reason, I wasn't scared to show him how I felt. It was the only thing I wanted to do. "It's not like that. Sex is something we learn about in abstract, clinical concepts. Condoms come with instructions. Health class provides textbook illustrations of parts and procedures. I'd known how things were supposed to go, the actions, what would physically happen between us. But the thing I'd never understood were how brightly the feelings would spark. The absolute euphoria of knowing that Connor and I couldn't physically get any closer to each other." Connor kept quietly asking if I was okay. He seemed more unsure than I was, his quivering hands holding on to me, like he was off balance. He had more experience than I did, but I could tell that what we were doing was different from what he'd had with any other girl before. The entire world fell away until it was just me and Connor. Finally. Chapter 34. I woke up to the morning sun on my face and Connor's arm draped across my chest. For a second, it felt like the best thing ever. And then I shot up. Connor lifted his head, glanced at the clock, and cursed under his breath. I was already standing, putting my clothes back on. My underwear and my bra were cold from having spent the night on the floor. I could barely look at Connor. It wasn't regret, not exactly, but all the wonderful feelings from the night before had been replaced by dread. There was no way an accident like this could have happened in our shed. It was too cold, too uncomfortable. Maybe for a reason.
"I've got to get out of here," I said. "How do I get out of here?"
I knew I sounded panicked and crazy, and I was, absolutely. I needed to get back to my house before my parents noticed I was missing. Connor opened his bedroom door a crack. He sniffed out in the hallway.
"My mom's already cooking."
Shit. It was Thanksgiving. We usually went to my Aunt Doreen's house, but Mom always woke up early to make a pie. "I need to go, now." Connor raked his hands through his hair.
"Okay, here's what we'll do. I'll carry you downstairs, then I'll go into the kitchen and distract my mom while you leave through the front door."
My heart wilted.
This wasn't at all fun or exciting, like it used to be to sneak out to the shed. I finished getting dressed while Connor put on sweats and a t-shirt. We didn't speak to each other. Connor seemed too tired for words, and I was too wide awake to be able to choose from the thousands that were swirling with alarm in my head.
As Connor carried me down the stairs, I could hear his mother whistling from the kitchen, and apparently she could hear him, too.
"Connor?"
she called out. He stopped, and I felt both of our hearts pounding together.
"Yeah, Mom?"
"You're up early,"
I smelled your cooking.
Well, pancakes are just about ready. Go wake up your sisters and your father.
Connor let me down when we reached the bottom step. The front door stood a few feet away.
Okay,
he whispered.
Listen,
I'll text you later,
I whispered back, then pushed him toward the kitchen. Connor disappeared around a corner, and I stayed still until I heard him talking to his mom. Then I tiptoed to the front door and pulled it open, or at least I tried, but it was locked. I fiddled 100 combinations with the deadbolt and the latch on the knob and kept pulling as hard as I could. A toilet flushed. Upstairs, where Connor's sisters were supposed to be sleeping, my hand was cold and clammy on the brass knob. I heard footsteps descending the stairs behind me. The lock finally clicked and I pulled the door open. The cold slapped me in the face. That and the brightness. It had snowed about a foot overnight. White reflected everywhere. I stepped outside and closed the door behind me harder than I intended to. The brass knocker tapped a few times. I took off running to my car, leaving footsteps in the snow, evidence the whole way. Snow soaked into my pant legs, burned my ankles. My car was covered. I pulled my hands inside my coat and wiped off just enough so I could see. Then I jumped inside and turned on the car and hit the gas, my hands, my face, everything stinging red. As I turned down the driveway, I glanced back up at the house. Mrs. Hughes stood on the front porch, watching me go. Usually, when I left Connor's house, I felt better than I had before I'd come. But not this time. My cell buzzed in the cup holder. I thought maybe it was Connor, but it was my parents. I scrolled through my call history. My home number filled up every single slot since 5 in the morning. I pulled over on the side of the road, cleaned off the rest of my windshield, and let the heater warm up. I tried to come up with a plan. My thoughts kept creeping back to what I'd done with Connor, flashes of skin and rushes of heat. But instead of enjoying the memories, I was imagining lies to cover the fact that it had happened. My parents sat together on the couch watching one of those 24-hour news channels. I didn't know if they were looking for breaking news, local girl found dead in ditch. They looked paler, older than I'd ever seen them.
I'm so sorry, I said. They both rushed to me, pulling at me, hugging me, and checking me over. My mom was crying. My dad had his jaw set, tears in his eyes. The way they looked at me, it made me want to vomit. How much I'd let them down. How terribly I'd worried them. The goodwill of me simply being alive wore away quickly. They demanded to know where the hell I'd been.
I was at Autumn's house. I fell asleep.
I thought you weren't talking to Autumn. Mom's voice was strange. She didn't exactly believe me, but I could tell she wanted to. And I was in luck because of my fight with Autumn. Apparently, Mom hadn't called over there to look for me.
We made up. I called her last night to finally talk things over. And Autumn invited me over so we could do it in person. We cried a lot. It was exhausting and I ended up falling asleep over there. I'm really, really sorry.
I hadn't noticed that I was crying, but I was. Because I was lying. And because I wanted my lie to be the truth. I got one last hug from each of them before I was grounded. Chapter 35. Connor texted me a bunch of times over the rest of the Thanksgiving holiday. They started out really apologetic and concerned. Messages like, sorry, and were your parents awake? I texted back, I'm fine, and then I turned my phone off. I wished I could turn myself off, too. I could barely look at my parents. Not after how easily I'd lied to them. I was a terrible liar, but they ate it up. What other choice did they have? They didn't want to think that their daughter was capable of doing the things I'd done. I didn't want to think I was capable of them, either. As right as sleeping with Connor had felt, the realization about how other people would judge what I'd done spoiled everything. I was okay in the shed, hidden in Connor's bedroom, when it was just us operating in a judgment-free zone. Except there was no such place in real life. The addition of everyone else in my life threw Connor and me off balance. I didn't turn my phone on again until Monday homeroom. My voicemail box was full of hang-ups. The texts from Connor flooded in. 11 of them. His tone changed with each one, sounding slightly more desperate.
Just let me know you're okay.
And angry.
Why are you ignoring me?
And defensive.
I didn't do anything.
He was right. He hadn't. I'd done it all. I first noticed people talking during lunch. I was in line at the cafeteria. Autumn, Marcy, and a couple of other girls were discussing something in fevered whispers. They were so captivated, they didn't even notice that they were totally blocking the registers. I made a big show of huffing and puffing as I squeezed between them and the chip rack to get by. I even said, "Excuse me," in a snotty way because I was so annoyed about my pizza.
You can never get hot pizza at school. Those red heating lamps don't do jack. You've got literally 5 minutes to eat your slice, and it will be lukewarm at best. Longer than that, and you're out of luck.
As I pushed past them, Autumn stopped whispering to give me a look. It wasn't a bitchy look, exactly. More one of confirmation. A knowing look. Like I was involved somehow in whatever story they were all talking about. That's when I started to get nervous. Had Connor told people about what we'd done? As a punishment for not texting him back? I knew he was mad at me, but I couldn't believe he'd do something like that. I spent the rest of the day watching people talk. By eighth period, it was clear Ross Academy was entirely abuzz over something extremely juicy. It seemed to be the kind of gossip that literally catches fire, transcending cliques and loyalties. The same thing had happened last year when Walter Desmond got a huge boner in gym class and refused to get out of the pool for 15 minutes. I lurked just inside the door of the library, partially enveloped in the folds of a big American flag. If I craned my neck until my neck hurt, I could see down the hall to where Deepak, Martin, and David were huddled together whispering. My ears rang. I tried that hard to eavesdrop.
Natalie?
Susan Choi popped up in front of me.
Did you want the tables pushed together, or did you want them, like, in rows?
Whatever, I said, rising up to my toes so I could see over her head. You choose.
Cool,
Susan said, then sprinted back to the rest of the students who'd come in for the meeting.
Okay, Natalie says that we can choose how to arrange the tables today. So, should we take a vote?
Now, there was too much noise in the library to hear the conversation down the hall, so I focused below Martin's spotty mustache and tried to read his lips. It proved completely unnecessary, though, because all three heads suddenly snapped back. The boys shouted, "Whoa!" and gasped for air in between deep laughs. My stomach seized. Sure, I'd had these kinds of panic attacks ever since Connor and I got together. Only this time, I wasn't just being paranoid. The realization made my legs quiver as the boys made their way into the library, and it didn't go unnoticed that none of them could make eye contact with me as they walked past. Susan popped back out of the room.
Natalie?
She bit her lip and glanced around.
Can I talk to you for a second before the meeting?
What, Susan?
There's something I want to tell you.
She exhaled so hard it fluttered her bangs.
There's a naked picture of Spencer making the rounds on everyone's cell phones.
I almost couldn't believe my ears. Are you kidding? Susan grimaced.
I thought you'd want to know since you're friends with her.
I felt so many things. Embarrassment for Spencer, anger, disappointment. It reminded me of the moment Autumn had told me about her and Chad Rivington, when I couldn't believe that a friend of mine could be so stupid. More than anything, though, I felt utter relief that it wasn't me people were talking about, that somehow I had miraculously dodged this bullet. "Does Spencer know?" I asked. Susan shook her head.
I'm not sure. I saw her sitting in some junior guy's lap at lunch, picking the sweet peppers off his hoagie. But if she doesn't, she will know soon. Everyone's phones are blowing up.
I shook my head. I wonder if she knows who took the picture.
Susan shrugged.
Maybe, unless she does this kind of thing all the time.
The implication of her words hung in the air.
I think it's been forwarded and re-forwarded so many times at this point, it's going to be difficult to figure it out.
Her lip curled.
It's really disgusting.
I stared down at Susan. She seemed horribly judgmental for someone who completely idolized Spencer a few weeks ago. Then again, that's how quickly people's perceptions could change. It only took one mistake, one stupid decision.
If you want to see it, you could ask Deepak. It's on his phone. He showed it to me.
She sounded almost proud.
I don't want to see a naked picture of Spencer, I said, and I don't think other people should be looking at it either.
It's a little too late for that, Susan said. By the end of our meeting, you'll probably be the only person left in school who hasn't seen it.
Spencer didn't show up for the student council meeting. I wasn't surprised. The whole meeting, people kept checking their phones as if they were hoping more photos might pop up. After the meeting, I walked straight to my car and called Connor. I was half afraid he wouldn't pick up, but he did on the second ring. He picked up and started yelling at me.
Where have you been? I've been calling you all weekend.
We need to talk.
Oh, so we only talk when you decide we need to?
He was really pissed.
I'm sorry. I don't know. I
trailed off.
Where can we meet?
People are going to be at the farm. We open for Christmas the day after Thanksgiving.
He sighed.
I had to bring the sleeping bag and everything inside.
Our shed was gone. It felt like a band-aid had been ripped off. Cruel, but necessary.
I don't want to go to your house,
I said, picturing his mother staring at me from the front porch. I could hear him thinking.
There's a little dirt road before my house, on the left. It's just a turnaround spot. I'll be there in 10 minutes.
I didn't think it was possible for our meetups to get any shadier. I meant it as a joke. A bad joke, because things were so awkward, and I wanted something to make things feel less tense. I could hear the disapproval in his silence, and then he hung up. I had a bad feeling driving over, and it got worse when I climbed out of my car. Connor leaned against the bumper of his pickup truck. He couldn't look at me, and I couldn't look at him. Of all things, I thought about Adam and Eve, how they'd been so happy playing naked in the garden, and then in one moment, it all turned to shame. They couldn't have even known what was happening. They'd never known anything but joy, and then suddenly, there was hesitation, silence, awkwardness. Everything was ruined. We stood in the snow and stared at each other's toes. I could feel him trying to muster up the courage to say something, so I made sure to say something first.
Well, have you seen it?
I asked. He was completely confused.
Have I seen what?
The picture of Spencer.
Maybe. Unless that's going to get me in even more trouble.
I smacked him on the arm.
This isn't funny. Did you just see it or do you have it?
He pulled his phone out from his pocket. I reached for it, but he lifted it high over his head.
Come on, let me see it.
Why do you want to?
Because she's my friend.
Then you probably shouldn't see it.
My heart fell.
Just show me.
He tapped a few buttons and then passed me the phone. Nothing could have prepared me for seeing Spencer like this on the tiny pixelated screen. Her curls, her puckered lips, her bare breasts cast forward toward the cameraman. My mind flashed back to that summer I'd babysat her. She had wanted to dance through the sprinklers, and so I told her to get her bathing suit on. The only one that wasn't dirty was one from the summer before, when Spencer was a lot shorter. A couple of the neighborhood boys had come to play in the sprinklers, too, and it wasn't until Spencer came up to me, dripping wet and begging for a popsicle, that I noticed. The straps dug deep in her shoulders. The front dipped too low. It barely covered her. You could see everything. The kids were all innocent then. They didn't notice or care. But I was uncomfortable because I knew better. I ran inside and made Spencer put on a t-shirt. And when I did, I felt like I was taking something away from her instead of covering her up. I forced myself to look at the photo again. Spencer thought she was sexy, but it just made me sad. She wasn't powerful, in control. She wasn't anything she thought she was. I went to hand the phone back, but something caught my eye. Spencer held a wad of fabric up at her neck. I recognized it instantly. Her plaid nightgown. Behind her were a bunch of lab desks, a cabinet full of glass beakers. And suddenly, I knew who took the picture. Mike Domsky.
What?
Mike took this picture. Connor looked at me blankly, like I didn't know what I was talking about. Look, I said. I saw him the night of the sleepover, coming out of the science lab with a shit-eating grin on his disgusting face. I know he did it.
You can't tell anyone about this, Sterling.
Says who? I started walking toward my car. Connor grabbed hold of my arm.
Please, don't get involved.
Why not?
He dropped his head back. I don't know. Because Spencer kind of had it coming after what she did to Mike in the theater. Because Spencer can do what she wants to do. Because it's none of your business.
I couldn't believe Connor was saying this. It was as if he'd pulled off the mask that I always suspected he was wearing. Are you kidding me?
Seriously, Spencer's going to do what she's going to do. You're not in charge of her. If she wants to tell someone, it's up to her, not you.
I stared at Connor. How could I have not seen that you are as big of a dick as Mike Domsky?
You're angry. I understand that, but don't take it out on me. I'm trying to protect you.
What does that even mean? I don't need you to protect me. I can protect myself.
You know what I think? You're using Spencer as an excuse not to deal with what's going on with us.
What is going on with us, Connor? We're having fun, right? Fun, fun, fun. Well, you know what? I'm not having fun anymore. Not when I have to lie to my parents. Not when I have to give up my life so you and I can mess around. I'm tired of messing around. It only leaves a mess. Because this is what happens. Don't you see? I handed back his phone. It stops being fun and it starts being other things. Like hurt and gossip and judgment and blame. You might not care about that. And Lord knows Mike Domsky doesn't. But I do. I know you don't want me to confront him, but you know what? It feels like I've been waiting for this moment my whole life.
Sterling, don't.
His words hit my back because I was already gone. And anyway, it was way too late for don't. Because we already had. Chapter 36. Spencer didn't answer any of my phone calls that night, obviously avoiding me. I drove to her apartment complex, but I couldn't remember which building I'd dropped her off at. When I went to school the next morning, I camped out at her locker. I sat right on the floor until homeroom bell. Only, she never showed up. I went to AP Chemistry and took my seat. It was across the room from where Spencer had taken her now infamous photo. It made me sick to stare at that open space, to think about what she'd done there with Mike Domsky. I knew she wouldn't want to talk to me about it, but I didn't care.
Mr. Quinn, may I use the bathroom?
He looked annoyed at my outburst, but nodded toward the oxygen molecule hall pass. I walked toward the main office. Principal Hurley was there, leaning over his secretary's desk. I waited to enter until he went into his office and closed the door.
Excuse me, I said to the secretary in my most polite voice, but Could you tell me if Spencer Biddle was marked present today? I have to give her a special student council message, and I haven't been able to find her.
Spencer was suspended this morning.
The secretary leaned in close to the small fern flanking her desk and whispered,
Principal Hurley became aware of a picture.
Damn.
When? About 15 minutes ago.
I sprinted out to the parking lot, and when Spencer wasn't there, I climbed into my car. I had to drive around a little before I found her, a few blocks from school, waiting to cross the street. I pulled over to the side of the road and put my hazards on. Come on, I said. Get in. Spencer didn't look at me.
I'm fine. Thanks anyway.
Spencer, don't be a baby. Let me drive you home. After a big sigh, she walked toward the car and leaned down to my window.
I don't want a lecture from you, okay? Because I really don't care. I honestly think the way everyone's getting worked up is funny.
Funny? Suspension is funny?
A week suspension is no big deal.
It will be when you start looking for colleges. I mean, I'm still haunted by a C+ I got in home ec sophomore year.
Well, I'm not planning on going to Harvard, so I'm sure I'll be fine.
I was fuming. She was clearly putting on an act. I know who took the picture, Spencer. I know it was Mike Domsky. The bravado melted from her face. It was the first time that I saw the little girl, the one I used to babysit.
It was not,
she lied.
It was too, Spencer. I saw him sneaking out of the labs that night, and you were wearing pajamas in the picture.
Ugh, I wanted to throw up thinking of her with him.
You knew what kind of an a-hole Mike was. Why would you do something so stupid? And why, in God's name, would you ever cover for him? The picture was just part of my plan to get him to drop his pants at the theater. I wanted to make him think I was interested. He's just trying to get me back. I thought it was over, but then...
What?
That pinky wave thing I made up. Everyone's been doing it. Not just the girls, the boys, too. This one freshman guy did it yesterday morning, and I thought Mike was going to explode. I guess that was the final straw. Honestly, I thought he deleted the picture. That's what he'd told me anyway.
So get him back. Tell on him.
Natalie, stay out of it.
If you're going to be in trouble for this, then he should be too, right? I mean, isn't that only fair? He took advantage of you, Spencer.
I wanted to pose for the picture. He didn't force me.
And that gives Mike free rein to exploit you?
Spencer, you're in trouble because of what he did.
She brushed her hair back.
Look, it's over. Mike and I are even. I just wanted to go away.
I laughed.
Go away? You're being passed around school like a trading card. Don't you have any self-respect? Of course I do.
Her voice was sharp. Of all people for her to be mad at, she was getting mad at me.
Haven't you learned anything from what I've taught you? You're better than this, Spencer.
She started laughing.
I love how you're basically calling me a slut, but you're doing the exact same thing with Connor.
Now the edge was in my voice. It's not the same thing.
You're letting Connor Hughes use you, or you're using him, whatever. Either way, you're a big phony. You play like you're so good, and that just because you fool around with Connor in secret, you're somehow better than me. It's easier for you to be mad at me, instead of at yourself.
I am nothing like you, Spencer. Nothing.
Just leave me alone. You're not my babysitter anymore.
Well, that's too bad, because you could really use one. I had enough. I was supposed to be in class anyway. Spencer could walk home with a cold for all I cared. I pulled away and vowed that I wasn't going to get involved any further. If Spencer wanted to destroy her life, so be it. But then, later that day, I saw Mike Domsky at lunch, grinning like the Cheshire Cat as people clamored to look at his cell phone. Suddenly, I understood why Spencer didn't tell. If she kept Mike out of it, the naked picture would be something she was okay with. but naming Mike, telling on him for what he'd done, would signal she actually did have a problem with it. And then suddenly, just like that, Spencer would be a victim. It was not a role she wanted to play. Or maybe it was more simple than that. Maybe Spencer just didn't have the guts to stand up to Mike Domsky, because the Mike Domskys of the world usually won. Either way, I knew I had to do the right thing, and I had to hope that Spencer would thank me later for it. Chapter 37. As soon as I finished eating, I headed for Principal Hurley's office. His secretary said he was busy, but I ignored her and opened his door.
"Let me call you back,"
he said and set his phone on the cradle. I didn't even wait for him to ask me what I was doing there. I just came right out and said, "I know who took that naked photo of Spencer. It was Mike Domsky." He leaned forward and said in this ridiculously helpless voice for a principal,
"What do you suggest I do?"
Wasn't it obvious? Mike should be held accountable in the same way Spencer was. 1 week suspension. Principal Hurley shook his head.
"Spencer is the one who broke the rules here. Spencer is the one who disrobed."
"Yes, but..."
"And I am sure that Mike Domsky wasn't the only one to forward the photograph."
"Well, of course, but..."
"I'm certainly not about to conduct a witch hunt, trying to find out everyone who was involved."
"I'm not saying you should, but like I just told you, Mike Domsky was the one who started it all. He took the picture."
"Perhaps he did, but it will be your word against his, since Spencer refuses to implicate her photographer. And anyway, Spencer was the one who chose to expose herself on school property. Otherwise, there would be nothing to take a picture of."
I could barely sit still. "So, that's it? You're going to suspend Spencer, but Mike doesn't get so much as a slap on the wrist?"
"I'll have a talk with him," Principal Hurley offered, "though I doubt he will confess. Now, do you need a pass back to class?"
I did not need a pass. I walked straight out and down to Mrs. B's office. Except she wasn't there. She was teaching. I paced the halls and finally found her classroom. I knocked on the door and summoned her out. She looked shocked by my disruption, to say the least. "Yes?" "Mike Domsky sent around a naked picture of Spencer. She got suspended, but nothing happened to him. And it is completely, totally unfair." Miss B closed the classroom door. "Natalie, breathe. Now, what's going on?" I did what she told me to. I breathed. And then I repeated everything slowly. When I was done, she asked,
"How do you know it was him?"
"Because Spencer's wearing the pajamas that she had on a girls' night. And you can tell the picture was taken in the science lab, which is exactly where I found Mike Domsky hiding."
She frowned. "I'm not following."
Except she was following. And then I realized that I was going to be in trouble, too. "Some boys snuck into the girls' night after you fell asleep. I tried to chase them out. I didn't want to upset you. I handled it."
"Oh, did you?"
Miss B shook her head. It looked like I'd only managed to delay the upset.
"Natalie, you're lucky that you haven't been officially implicated in this. Principal Hurley might suspend you, too."
Maybe Miss B was right. But Spencer was my friend. I had to defend her. "Please, you have to help."
"What I have to do is get back to my class."
"You have influence over Principal Hurley. You could tell him that Mike should be held equally responsible. He'd listen to you. I know he would."
"Natalie, someone like Spencer needs to learn that her actions have consequences. You tried to help her after those ridiculous prostitute shirts, and I supported you on that. But I'm afraid this time she's going to have to suffer her punishment. Whatever Principal Hurley decides."
She wiped at a bead of sweat on her forehead.
I will certainly see that Mr. Domsky's participation is investigated, but that won't let your friend off the hook. Now get back to class immediately, or I'm going to have to write you up. Chapter 38. You'd think I would have figured it out a little quicker. After all, I'd seen it happen before to Autumn, and then, just 2 days earlier, to Spencer. But it took about halfway through the Wednesday before I realized that everyone was talking about me. Granted, I was in a fog. I'd given up hope that Mike would be brought to any real justice, and I knew that once Spencer found out that I'd stuck my nose into her business, she'd probably never talk to me again. Connor and I weren't speaking. Miss B thought I was a moron for standing up for Spencer, and even worse, for letting boys into girls' night. And my friendship with Autumn felt like a distant memory. It turned out that Principal Hurley was true to his word. Maybe he realized that taking pictures of underage naked girls was illegal, so he wanted to get involved before the police did. Who knows? But he called Mike into his office for a stern talking to. Mike denied everything, of course. And really, how could it be proven? The photo was texted to so many cell phones, it was impossible to determine where it had originated from. And none of the boys at school would out Mike Domsky. Principal Hurley must have mentioned there was a witness because when Mike left that office, he knew I was involved, and he didn't waste any time in getting his revenge. I was packing up my books after school when Mike walked right up to my ear and whispered,
"I know all about you, about what you do with Connor. I've known since the first night you snuck over his place, you stupid little nympho."
I'd never been scared of Mike Domsky before, but at that moment, I trembled.
"I don't know what you're talking about,"
I managed to say.
"He's my best friend, bitch. You think he hasn't told me everything? I practically know what you look like naked."
There was no dignified exit to take, so I just ran. I left my locker door open and dropped my books on the floor, and I ran. In a way, I did save Spencer. Her naked picture was only infamous for about 48 hours before the torch was passed to me. I stayed home sick the next day, thinking it might temper things down. In fact, the opposite happened. Without me there, no one had to whisper. Friday was the most awful day of my whole life. It started with Connor walking up to my locker. I got there really early to avoid people, but he'd gotten there earlier.
"Please," I told him, "leave me alone. I don't want anyone to see us talking."
He looked like he hadn't slept, in the same way I hadn't slept. He looked haunted, in the same way I was haunted. He looked mad, in the same way I was devastated.
"You are unbelievable,"
he said, launching right into me. I launched right back.
"I told you I didn't want anyone to know what we were doing. And of all people, you told Mike?"
"Mike is my best friend. He didn't say anything about it until you tried to get him in trouble. I told you not to get involved."
"Oh, so am I the wrong one here? Mike takes naked photos of a 14-year-old girl and spreads them to the whole school, and I'm the one who did something wrong. Is that what you're saying?"
"No, believe me, I want to kill Mike right about now. It's just that..."
"What? It's just that what?"
"Look, I wish he hadn't done it. I really wish he hadn't.
And I wish that Spencer had kept her friggin' boobs covered up. But I also wish you wouldn't protect Mike. And I wish that the whole school didn't think I'm a slut. I trusted you to keep it between us. And you didn't. You let everyone into our private world. I thought you cared enough about me to never let that happen."
It was the first time I'd seen him so angry. His forehead crinkled up, and one vein became really prominent. He had his hands clenched. But I was just as mad. Madder, even.
"I never wanted any of this. In fact, I never wanted anything to do with you. I knew that you..."
"Save it, Sterling.
I'm not going to force you to stoop to my level.
He said the last part sarcastic.
I told you we needed to keep things quiet from the very beginning. So don't make me out to be the bad person here. It's my reputation that's been damaged. Everyone's laughing at me, not you.
I was screaming, shaking. How could Connor not see? He escaped from this whole thing unscathed. He had another notch in his belt. But me? I was a joke.
I'm sorry. I know everything sucks for you right now, but can't you see that's your own fault?
I laughed.
You're really great at this cheering up stuff. Thanks so much for making me feel better.
You're the one who made it seem like we were doing something wrong. Maybe you still feel like that because, for whatever reason, you think I'm not good enough for you. But I like you, okay? I've liked you from the very beginning.
It was never going to go anywhere.
Because you wouldn't let it go anywhere. Look, I know you've got a million and one reasons. I hear you. Most of them are true. We're probably not going to be a couple after graduation. You'll leave Liberty River and I'll be here. I get it. But you know what? I liked you anyway. I let myself have feelings for you despite not knowing how this would end.
He turned like he was going to walk away, but then thought better of it.
I'm done trying to convince you of who I am and why I'm worthy of you. And you can spin that however you want. Go ahead. And make me the bad guy so you can be the good girl. Except deep down, I know that you don't believe that's the way things are for a second.
It's too late, I whispered. To him? To myself? I wasn't sure. He heard.
It's only too late because you're saying it's too late.
I said it again. It's too late. It was only after he was gone that I started to cry. It was only when everyone else started showing up for school that I felt completely alone. It was crazy, the weight of everyone's eyes on me. Their looks actually felt heavy. They made it hard for me to pick up my legs. I thought about Autumn and how I thought I'd protected her from this. But I didn't have a clue what it was really like, how terribly cruel and mean and judgmental people could be. I ran to the girls' bathroom near the teacher's lounge for an escape. I cried right there at the sink. I felt pathetic. Student council president turned closet slut. It was too perfect, the kind of story that people loved to tell. I had to accept this. As much as I wanted to blame Mike and Connor and Spencer, it was my fault I was in this situation. I'd known better than to get involved with someone like Connor. I'd known the risks, and I'd done it anyway. Except that what everyone thought of me didn't even come close to how badly I thought of myself. I grabbed a paper towel and wiped my face. It was so rough, like sandpaper. My whole face was red and blotchy and swollen. I ducked my head and splashed it with some cold water. When the faucet was turned off, I heard a voice, unmistakable, through the vents over my head. Miss B.
I didn't think she was that kind of girl.
I scampered up onto the ledge and strained to listen. I overheard two of my students talking about her in homeroom yesterday. I would have never thought Natalie would do something like that. Then again, she's been acting out big time, fraternizing with that Spencer girl. I closed my eyes to stop the room from spinning. What would have ever made me think that teachers wouldn't hear about this, too? After all, it was all over the school. Another teacher agreed.
Natalie always seemed like such a nice girl.
But I am a nice girl. I wanted to scream.
I know. That's the worst thing.
I thought she was something special. I put a lot of my own time and attention into her for nothing.
Miss B sighed a deep, painful sigh.
And Connor Hughes, of all people. You'd think she'd be smarter than that. I feel heartbroken over the whole thing.
I had to get out of that bathroom, or else I was going to puke. I wanted to defend myself, but I knew Miss B was right. I should have been smarter. I should have been a lot of things. I had always known what kind of girl I was. Until I didn't.
Chapter 39. I'd hoped that the weekend would have made everything blow over, but of course it didn't. People were still talking about me on Monday. Rightfully so, I supposed. By Monday after school, it was clear what I needed to do. I spent my lunch period in my car, working on my letter of resignation for Miss B. In the first draft, I said way too much, about how disappointed in myself I was, the whole big, long, sorry story of me and Autumn, how I'd messed up with Connor. I poured my heart out. You could tell by the tear stains and the terrible penmanship. Except when I reread it, it made me sick. I was groveling for her forgiveness. I was making excuses, when really, I had no one to blame but myself. It was childish, and I knew Miss B would think so, too. I made my next draft a single sentence long. Though it has been a pleasure working with you, I hope you'll accept my resignation effective immediately. Sincerely, Natalie Sterling. I slipped it under her office door. I'd thought resigning would make me feel better. It didn't. After school, I went to my locker. The agenda for today's student council meeting was to finalize plans for the ceremony when my portrait would be hung on the library wall and to address and mail the invitations Miss B had printed. I'd quit just in time so the event could be canceled. I got my books, closed my locker door, and there was Spencer, holding my resignation letter.
What the hell is this, Natalie?
Where did you get that? I snatched it out of her hands.
Where do you think? I went to Miss B's office to hand in assignments from my suspension. I saw you sliding it under her door. Thank God I scooped it up before she found it.
I could have strangled her. Do you have any idea what you've done? They're mailing the portrait ceremony invitations today. Now I look even more irresponsible for not showing up.
Spencer was unmoved. You can't quit student council, Natalie. You're the president.
I can too, I said, and stormed down the hall. Spencer kept pace.
Natalie, you were right. What I did with Mike was stupid. I wanted to pretend like I didn't care, and you know what? Before you, I wouldn't have cared. But now I do.
I'm very happy for you.
And here's what else I know.
She grabbed my arm and made me look at her.
You stuck up for me when no one else would. And you did the same thing for Autumn, which begs the question, when will you start sticking up for yourself?
I shook my head.
It's not that easy, Spencer. I can't even look at Miss B, never mind everyone else at school. I actually had to hear Miss B in the bathroom saying the most awful things about me. And they were true, Spencer. They were all true. They are not, and you know it. Quit feeling sorry for yourself.
I do feel sorry for myself. I'm mortified. You were right, okay? I built myself up to this impossible standard, and I failed. I failed miserably.
That's fine, so long as it's your judgment and not someone else's.
All right. I'll just magically forget that the entire school thinks I'm a hypocritical slut and answer to myself. Let's see. I've messed everything up with Connor, with Autumn, with Miss B, with you.
Even though I was trying to be sarcastic, tears filled my eyes.
So that's the problem? Not the sex?
I had to think about it for a second. Sure, the reality that everyone at Ross Academy was judging what I'd done with Connor felt awful, but that wasn't what made my heart break.
No, it's not the sex, I sighed.
It's that I've hurt the people I love. I've let everyone down.
Spencer took back my resignation letter and ripped it in half.
I won't let you give up on something I know you still care about.
I took a deep breath to say something, but stopped. In fact, in that moment, I stopped everything. I stopped thinking about what the rest of the school thought. I stopped worrying about making Miss B proud. I stopped thinking about Mike Domsky's taunts and the look on my parents' face as they all trusted me. I turned off all that noise to ask myself one simple question. What really matters here? And it's by asking the question that I found the answer.
Chapter 40. I ran outside, hoping Autumn hadn't left school yet. I found her in the parking lot, sitting on the hood of her car with Marcy and a bunch of other girls. They had the windows unrolled, so you could hear her radio. She was happy, smiling. I tried to be brave and put one foot in front of the other. It was like I was walking into a thick, heavy wind. Each step was labor. Everyone saw me approach. They got quiet and watched me struggle. I stopped feet from the bumper. The headlights were on, and I squinted into the spotlight. The winter wind whipped my hair into my mouth when I opened it. I coughed, and the squeeze it put over my body didn't let go. I couldn't breathe, like the icy air was freezing me from the inside out.
"Natalie,"
Autumn said, springing to her feet. I heard the worry in her voice. She still cared for me, not that I deserved it. It felt like a dream, one too good for the nightmare life I'd been living. It was cruel to have a moment of what our friendship once had been, a reminder of what I'd royally screwed up. I cried, because I didn't want to wake up. Autumn didn't say goodbye to her friends, or maybe she did, and I couldn't hear her over my sobbing. She put me in her car, and I watched them walk off in another direction.
"I'm taking you home,"
Autumn announced, and climbed in the other side. I cried the whole way. Autumn helped me out of the car and walked me up the driveway. I leaned on her with all my weight because I couldn't hold myself up. I mustered enough breath to say,
"This is turning out to be a terrible apology,"
while Autumn found the spare key to our back door.
"It's okay,"
Autumn said. And the miracle was, as soon as she said it, things felt okay. Like I was getting where I needed to be. When I'd run out of tears, Autumn and I sat on opposite ends of my bed, like it was a scale or a seesaw. I was still mustering up exactly what to say to her when she dropped a stone on my side.
"You never forgave me for what happened with Chad."
It wasn't so much the biting accusation of someone scorned as much as it was delivered in the calculated speak of a lawyer. An indisputable fact. "I know," I said. "I was mad at you for getting hurt. I shouldn't have blamed you. It wasn't your fault." Her bottom lip started to quiver. She took a deep breath and tried to compose herself.
"When I went to see Chad that day in the locker room, there was this little voice in my head telling me not to go. But I didn't listen to it.
And that wasn't the first time I'd heard it either. There were other times, lots of other times. I can't explain it, but I think I knew deep down that Chad was no good. But I was too caught up in everything. How the fact that a boy liked me made me feel that I thought I was in love with him.
But Autumn, you couldn't have known that. I've thought about this a million times. If I only would have listened to that voice, maybe none of that stuff would have happened to me. It was a lot of guilt to carry on top of everything else. So I made a promise to myself that if I ever heard it again, I wouldn't shut it off. I think that's part of why I freaked out on you, because that voice finally came back to me and told me that I was better than fish sticks, that I shouldn't hold myself back anymore, that I wasn't a bad person, and you were making me feel like a bad person, Natalie, but I was really just a girl who'd made a stupid mistake."
I nodded. "And I used that to keep you close to me.
I had no other friends, and that's not your fault. It was mine. I've never been good at opening up to people.
I know, which makes what happened even more weird.
She sighed.
I'm not saying this to be mean, but I can't believe you had sex with Connor Hughes.
I thought about Connor and his last words to me, how he could spin things any way I'd wanted. I could never understand how he always seemed sure of himself. Now I did. It was because Connor really did know what kind of person he was. He had no regrets because he always shot from his heart. He was the total opposite of someone like Chad Rivington. Or me. I wanted to, I told Autumn. It was the naked truth.
Well, you're a smart girl, and I trust that you're going to make the right decisions for yourself.
Yeah, because I'm the queen of right decisions. Autumn took my hand.
You see, the best thing about wrong decisions is that they don't prevent you from making the right decisions later on. It's harder, but it's not impossible.
Time had taught her, and now she was teaching me. Chapter 41. Did I regret having sex with Connor? A little. But it wasn't close to the earth-shattering regret I'd expected to feel. If anything, I regretted screwing up a beautiful moment because I was too messed up to see it as a good thing we'd done together. To see it as something shared by two people who really cared about each other. The snow was falling steadily as I drove to Connor's house, tiny flakes like confetti. My windshield wipers swished across the glass like a metronome. There was traffic all the way up the driveway. A man with a flashlight directed cars to a parking lot. Mostly minivans or SUVs full of kids with knitted hats and scarves. The Christmas tree farm was crawling with people. The parking guy directing cars, young girls dressed as elves, burly men with saws. The gift shop had Christmas music playing inside, and a table set up outside where you could buy hot chocolate or hot apple cider to keep warm. There was even a reindeer in an enclosure that kids were feeding pellets. Families waited for their turn to walk through the trees. I saw Connor leading a family of four through the snow. He only had on a thermal and a ski hat. I was wrapped up in my down parka and wondered how he wasn't freezing until I saw one of the young boys pick out a tree. Connor grabbed his saw, dropped to his knees, and started to cut it down. He was there, on the ground, working so hard. I watched as his muscles flexed. The tree fell against the snow and made the most wonderful sound. The family cheered. Connor tied some twine around the trunk and dragged it back through the snow for them. He saw me then. I hoped he would come right over, but he looked away and kept dealing with the family. He was not going to make this easy on me. I walked over.
Can I please talk to you?
I asked.
I can't right now, Sterling.
Connor, please.
He heard it in my voice, I'm sure. The pain.
All right,
he said. He walked us over to the cider table where his mother sat.
Mom,
he said,
I'm going to take a quick break.
She looked me over. I couldn't tell if she had recognized me from Thanksgiving morning, but she fixed me a cup of cider and Connor a cup of cocoa, a dollop of freshly made whipped cream on top. Connor and I walked, our collective silence sad, layered over the sounds of families, of trees falling, of holiday music, tinkling far away. The moon sat low in the sky, giving off barely enough light to see. We didn't go to the shed. We didn't go to the house. We stayed in the woods, and I told him what I needed to tell him, unsure if it was what he needed to hear.
I want to apologize for how I acted, I said. I was afraid to get involved with you. I didn't want to admit that I liked you. I was afraid of how it would make me look. I can't be with someone who doesn't accept me for who I am.
You have to understand, I'm new at this. We both did things wrong. We got involved before we knew each other. I mean, I thought I knew you, but I didn't. Not really. I tried to take his hand, only he wouldn't let me. He was shivering now, the cold setting in.
Do you regret what we did?
He asked.
Because that's been the worst part of this, thinking you might hate me over what happened. I went through something like that once with Bridget Roma, and it was terrible.
His voice caught in his throat, and he tipped his head down. I saw tears in his eyes. Connor, that's not even close to what happened with us. Even though I put every ounce of earnestness I could muster into my words, Connor still seemed uncertain. And he wasn't looking at me. He was focused on the footprints we'd left in the snow.
So, where does that leave us now?
He asked. I want you to come to my portrait ceremony as my date. He didn't look up.
Really?
Really. This time, when I tried to take his hand, he let me. We stood like that, and for a brief moment, we were the center of the world. I heard his mom calling for him, and he heard it too. Go, I said.
Are you sure?
Yeah, go. I'll call you later. It felt so easy, and even though it wouldn't always be, we were at least going to try. I didn't leave right away. I stayed in the woods. I heard the faint voices of other people. I felt the cold against my skin, but mostly I was aware of my own breathing. My own thoughts, my own past, present, and future. I realized then, and would have to keep realizing in all the years to come, it didn't matter if I was the kind of girl who had sex, or the kind of girl who had her portrait on a wall in the library, or the kind of girl who got into the best college, or the kind of girl who didn't tell her parents everything, or the kind of girl who teachers loved. I just needed to be okay with all the kinds of girl I was. Epilogue. The library looked beautiful. Spencer had taken the lead and made herself the head of the decorating committee. She bought a nice tablecloth, cut cheese in perfect little squares, had the sparkling apple cider on ice. It was incredibly sweet. How proud she was of me. Like a little sister. Everyone from student council showed up. My parents, Principal Hurley. I still caught some people whispering, but it didn't matter. I found Connor near the portrait wall. He was alone now, but earlier he'd been animatedly discussing fantasy football picks with Martin and David and Deepak. It was nice to see because things had definitely been strained within Connor's circle of friends. Those guys all still hung out together, playing ping pong during lunch and drinking over at Bobby Doyle's house. But Connor hadn't talked to Mike since we decided to work things out. Mike hadn't talked to him either. I wasn't sure they'd ever speak again. I had to believe their friendship would have ended eventually. Anyway, that's what Connor told me whenever I brought Mike up. Maybe Connor said it to make me feel better, or maybe he honestly believed it. But I learned that there had been other fights, other arguments before me. Just never any this big. As much as I hated Mike, I would never forgive him for what he did to me and to my friends. I still felt the weight of a friendship ending because of the secrets I'd tried to keep. But Connor seemed at peace with how everything had played out. Ultimately, I needed to trust that Connor would do what was best for him. And he paid me the same courtesy, knowing I'd be hearing from colleges in a couple of weeks. In the meantime, though, we simply loved each other.
"You look beautiful,"
Connor said, staring up at my portrait. He leaned in close and whispered,
"And you can't see the hickey at all."
"Natalie, could you come with me for a minute?" Miss B appeared next to us, hands clasped in front of her. I kissed him on the cheek in front of everyone. "Be right back," I said. Miss B and I walked to the opposite side of the room without speaking. It was hard for me to accept how different our relationship suddenly was. After all, Miss B wasn't my mother. She had no business forming an opinion on what I did or did not do in my personal life. She'd handed me my college recommendation letter a week earlier. It was in a sealed envelope, as was standard practice. I worried for a second that Miss B might have written something nasty about me. I think she must have seen it on my face because she said, "Any college will be lucky to have you." I knew she was still disappointed in me, and maybe it wasn't over Connor at all, but the way I'd been acting, irresponsible, flaky. But all that had changed now that Connor and I were out in the open. I was back on my game, and Miss B would eventually have to notice. Three older women stood near the shelf that held Ross Academy's old yearbooks. They had a bunch of them spread open on the table, poring over the pictures. Each of the ladies had name tags stuck to their dresses, but instead of names, they went by numbers. Miss B guided me forward. "May I present Natalie Sterling, number 9.
"Aren't you beautiful?"
number 6 said.
"We're so proud,"
number 5 said.
"Congratulations,"
number 7 said.
I smiled my best smile.
"Thank you so much for coming. I'm really honored."
"Are you kidding? This is so much fun for us old biddies."
Number 5 squeezed my hand.
"Getting to remember all the trouble we used to cause." "None more so than number 4 right here,"
number 7 said, pointing at Miss B. I'd never seen Miss B blush before. Heck, I never seen Miss B look anything other than perfectly poised. It was a huge relief. Spencer flitted by with a bag of trash, collecting dirty napkins and empty cups. I grabbed her by the arm.
"I want to introduce you all to Spencer Biddle, one of our freshman representatives this year. I have no doubt that 3 years from now, her portrait will be up on the wall, too."
Spencer grinned.
"You can call me Perfect 10.
Miss B almost choked. Autumn came up and twirled me around.
"I'm so proud of my best friend."
"Me too,"
I said, and we hugged each other as tightly as we could. Of all the things to feel happy about, I was happiest that Autumn and I were friends again. No matter what the future held, new friends, new boyfriends, new directions, I knew we'd be in each other's lives forever. Change wasn't something to fear anymore, and even though my picture was on the wall, I didn't care so much about how I'd be remembered, so long as I never forgot.
This has been an Audible Inc. production of Not That Kind of Girl, written by Siobhan Vivian, narrated by Emma Meltzer. Producer Mike Charzuk. Copyright 2010 by Siobhan Vivian. Production copyright 2013 by Audible Inc.
Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.